My passion for hair started with me planning in my doll baby's hair. I was really big on just learning certain hairstyles that I saw on television, and I would try it on my doll baby's hair. So my name is Tanisha Palmer, and I'm a community activist and mother of two children. As I got into my teenage years, I began to practice doing hair on my two girlfriends' hair. I wasn't really good at it. One of my favorite hairstyles was the finger waves. It's the technique that it takes time, it takes a lot of practice to do. It requires two combs, and you gotta take it in a certain way. You gotta get the hair into like a snake, kind of like a pattern. Now, back in the day, the way that people wore hairs was, it was a kind of way of like financial stature. Like if you wore braids, it showed like you was at an elite level. So in our area, that wave hairstyle, it was a fashionable hairstyle, but it was also a hairstyle that was like a little expensive. And I got so good with it that I'm able now today, I could use anything. I can use a pen. I could use my finger. But it took me a very long time to be able to master this hairstyle.
You would ask me, can you do my hair? And I would let you, and you would do your thing. And, you know, you would burn me. I'm Amy Fitzgerald, Tanisha Palmer's longest friend, lifelong friend. That's what we are.
I remember I would always use an excessive amount of hair gel, anything actually that I used when I started.
What was the grease you used to be using?
It was Blue Magic hair grease. My friends would walk around with gaps in their hair, burn marks from the grease. I would always say it's the heat. I would always say, oh, it's not me. It's the heat. It's the grease. And it's melting down. It's hitting your hair.
But, you know, I rocked it. I kept it in. You were practicing. You were bettering yourself. You were perfecting your craft. I might have been looking crazy for a little bit. We might have washed it out and tried again. I know you wouldn't have me going nowhere and looking crazy.
There's something about hair, too. And it's just like it builds a relationship and bond.
I didn't mind. You were my best friend, so I didn't care.
From WHYY, you're listening to Philadelphia Revealed. I'm your host, Jamie J., Executive Director of First Person Arts, a nonprofit organization that believes everyone has a story to tell. Across 10 episodes, you're going to get a tour of the Atwater Kent Collection, sometimes called Philadelphia's Attic. It's a collection that's grown over decades, acquiring Philly's material culture from individuals, families, institutions, sometimes literally from the trash. In every episode of this podcast, you'll learn about an object in the Atwater Kent Collection and hear a story inspired by it from a first-person art storyteller. We think every Philadelphian will be able to see themselves in this collection, and that learning about Philadelphia's many histories can help us understand its present and future. This is episode 4, Modern Style, with storyteller Tanisha Palmer. Tanisha is a community wellness specialist and founder of In the Eyes of Grieving Mothers. She works in marginalized communities, providing support to help individuals navigate bereavement and substance abuse disorders. Tanisha was inspired by a tortoiseshell hair comb from 1876. It's a beautiful decorative hairpiece with an intricate design that honors the Centennial Exhibition, a.k.a. the United States' 100th birthday party. It made Tanisha think about her own hair journey.
What were we putting in our hair back then? We were doing French rolls and waves and scrunchies. We kind of changed with the trends.
My friend Amy, she would always let me press her hair out and use curling wax.
It was hot, but she was pressing it out real good. Getting close to the scalp with the grease.
I was doing their hair about like once or twice a week, and they would try to maintain it by using hair scarves or sleeping in a certain way, you know, that would probably cause cranks in their neck, but to make sure that their hair didn't get messed up. for me, you know, being raised off of county assistance, we really didn't have the financial funds for us to be able to afford the hairstyles that was out back then. So that was another great reward for us as well, me being able to learn the styles and perfect it. Once I got to high school, I took a cosmetology course, which was so helpful for me. Unfortunately, I had got pregnant with my first child, so I had to drop out of school. So after that, what I did was I became a certified nurse assistant. I moved to Philadelphia and I started my career, and I found another passion for that, you know, being able to be there for people on their sick bed and being able to take care of them, not just physically, but also help them and build their confidence while they was going through their challenging times. Most of my patients were senior citizens or elderly people. So I would do their hair for them on days that I would come in, and they would be appreciative of it. You know, they would come out more, open the front door. I want to sit out front today, you know, want to be seen, acknowledged. Appearance is very important to anyone. I know even on my down days, if I go and I put my hair up and fix myself up, even if I don't even, if the clothes not matching, if the hair is done, as we say, slayed, but if the hair is done, it makes me feel really confident about myself. And that's what, you know, really highlighted my interest with the comb, with the Centennial comb. You can get your hair done, you can get a style in your hair, but it's like it adds on a piece that complements it. And that's what the Centennial comb does. It brings a highlight to something that's already beautiful. It's not modern, but I would wear it today.
It's a wonderful piece of tortoise shell, so it's got a great tortoise shell color. It's fairly large for someone who had a full head of hair.
That's Stacy Swigert, the director of the Atwater Kent Collection.
Across the top of it is spelled out in capital letters, Centennial. So it was definitely made and produced for the 1876 Centennial Exhibition. The Centennial was the 100th anniversary of the United States of America. So Declaration of Independence was signed in 1776. So in 1876, they wanted to have a grand old party. And why not have it in Philadelphia?
The World's Fair was a new concept at the time. They were big, elaborate festivals where countries and companies could show off the fruits of the Industrial Revolution, modernity, and progress. There were exhibitions of new inventions, arts, and fashion. In 1876, its 100th birthday, the U.S. also wanted to stake its claim as a world industrial power. Events that celebrate any history, but maybe especially the founding of the United States, are always interesting for what they leave out. The first World's Fair in the U.S. was happening just 10 years after the end of the Civil War.
The wounds were still really fresh in 1876. People from both the North and the South would be coming to this World's Fair. You had veterans coming to this fair, and you didn't really want to address it.
Still, the party pressed on. The fair would last for months, and it required a massive construction project to pull it off. 3,000 workers built the main building. It all took place in Fairmount Park.
There were over 260 buildings, and it was kind of a city unto itself. Only a couple were meant to be permanent structures after the fair, but everything else was temporary.
The center of the fair was Memorial Hall, still standing in Fairmount Park, now home to the Please Touch Museum. At the time, Philadelphia was known as the workshop of the world because of its importance in manufacturing and industry. So the Centennial highlighted new inventions of all kinds.
So there was a main exhibition hall that kind of had everything. There was agricultural hall, so anything with farming. There was also the art gallery, which was Memorial Hall. So sculpture, photography, painting, watercolor. And then there was machinery hall. There were train cars, locomotives inside the building.
The fair was filled with marvels. Part of the Statue of Liberty, the hand holding the torch, was on display.
People could go up inside and you could stand on the torch. So there's some great photographs of people looking on the torch. And it would have been a great visual tower that you could climb up and then see the grounds of the fair. other inventions like root beer was introduced there through Charles Hires, a Philadelphia pharmacist who invented root beer. And then the banana was introduced. So people had never experienced bananas before, and it was sold for a few cents wrapped in kind of like a tin foil.
The fair was also filled with all kinds of new styles, new fashions, and new products. Hair care products, fabric swatches, men's and women's underwear. It was also the era of the snake oil salesman. So there were all kinds of tonics and potions and the latest and greatest dubious cures of the time. It would have been a full-on sensory experience.
Visual cacophony of so many things and so many textures and colors and things to look at and touch and experience. I would imagine it would be a little overwhelming just because there was so much to look at.
Women did exhibit over 750 displays of industrial and fine arts, woven goods, scientific achievements, literature, and inventions. But it was all restricted to the women's pavilion. There was even a mechanical wheel operated by a woman wearing pants. But most women, Stacy thinks, were coming dressed in their finest, probably fairly impractical clothing.
It would not have been casual. You would have gone and you would have been dressed fairly well. Because, again, it's a place that you want to see and be seen. I think the norm would have been you need to be dressed up and looking quite lovely. This is, you know, mid-ish 19th century. And so gowns were kind of big. I would imagine it's May to November. It was probably hot a lot of the time. There were so many layers on women. I would imagine it would have been uncomfortable walking around the fairgrounds because it was so extensive. A lot of women had fairly long hair, but they would pin it up and have these high styles with lots of curls and things that drop down and lots of hair ornaments. Hair ornaments were quite popular. So you may or may not be wearing a hat. Hats were still popular. There was combs and pins and jewelry that you could put into your hair. And so some of those hairstyles would have been fairly massive.
Say you were walking the grounds in your elaborate outfit and your hair fell out of place or you tore the hem of your dress.
You could go to the Department of Public Comfort building and have somebody sew it up. So I would imagine that there was probably somebody on site that if you had an issue and your hair came down out of its whatever, you had it tied up or pinned up, somebody would probably be there to help you out.
Over 10 million people visited Fairmount Park between May 10th and November 10th, 1876. People of all races and classes, men and women. But the fair itself was segregated. Women and Black people were only admitted on certain days. Native Americans were brought to the fair to be exhibited. And the workers who constructed the main building couldn't visit when it operated because it was closed on Sundays, their only day off. Frederick Douglass was invited to sit on the dais on opening day, but not to speak. And he was almost denied entrance by police who couldn't believe that a Black man would be sitting on stage with the president. So as much as the Centennial was imagined as a place to put the country's best foot forward, it was no utopia.
There was all these little underpinnings of differences and challenges that nobody really wanted to talk about.
In November, the fair came to a close, but attendees could take a piece home with them.
I'll call it swag. You know, you go and you get your little stress ball or somebody gives you the candy with the logo of the company on it. Drinking cups, little medallions. They had puzzle blocks, little like cup and ball with logos and pictures and images of the different buildings. So the five main buildings at the fair were very common images that you could find on a lot of these souvenirs.
That's where the comb came from in the Atwater Kent collection, the one that inspired Tanisha. It's a hair ornament and a souvenir. It reads 1776 to 1876, Centennial. The Centennial was, by most accounts, a success. It didn't make a ton of money, but it made a splash. Philadelphia has tried to replicate that celebration with less success. In 1926, There was a sesquicentennial, the 150th anniversary of the founding.
And it was kind of a bust. They spent a lot of money and nobody really came.
1976 was the bicentennial, the 200th anniversary. Also a bit of a flop, though it did lead to the creation of a few more Philadelphia institutions, including the African American Museum and the Mummers Museum. The Atwater Kent Collection has souvenirs from all of these celebrations. The next big anniversary is coming up in 2026, which is the 250th anniversary, aka the semi-quincentennial. And once again, Philadelphia will throw a big party, one that tries to honor where we've been and make sense of where we're going.
So the thing that was interesting to me was that the centennial took place around a Civil War. I could kind of relate to that today because even with, you know, a lot of things that's going on economically, people having their challenges, everybody wants an outlet. You know, everybody wants a place where though they could come, wind down, enjoy, dress up, not kind of forget about, you know, what's going on in the world, but just have a place to be able to socialize. I would have loved to attend the event. So in 2016, I decided to go back and get my high school diploma. I attended a program at Temple University for returning adults. During that time, I had challenges. I had a lot of challenges because I haven't been in school. I had dropped out in 2000. So in 2016, when I went back, I would sit back with my professor and I would spend time with him so I could retain the information that was being taught. The time frame, it was a 2-year program. However, I was so determined and I was so eager to learn that I completed in a matter of 6 months. I was so excited. So once I got my GED, I immediately went to hair school.
Tanisha graduated quickly with her GED and enrolled at the Beauty Institute on Roosevelt Boulevard. She was thrilled to be back learning about hair. Then she got a message from her GED teacher. There was a ceremony for graduates coming up, and he really wanted Tanisha to attend.
He was so adamant, like, we really want you to come. We really want you to come. And I was sharing with my teacher at the beauty school that I didn't really think it was necessary to go because I already completed it and I'm in hair school. But they were like, no, they were like, Tanisha, you know, like, you earned it. Like, we're going to get you prepared. You should go. They did my hair for me. I had a press and curl, and I had a little pendant, actually. It was pinned up. Like with some of the, like the centennial piece with the hair comb with rhinestones on there. It was like 3 combs to hold up the massive hair that I had. In hair school, whenever you're getting your hair done, it's not turned to the mirror, so you can't see yourself, right? So it's just like a makeover. Like, so when I turned around, I saw myself, I was like, oh my, I immediately started crying. And it was like, no, Tanisha, you're going to mess your makeup up. That was a great experience in my life. It was emotional and I was excited because they really took their time out. I mean, my teacher, Kayla, she came over, she did my hair. So it was kind of like I was just getting poured back into from all the work that I had done for everyone. It was just like I was just getting poured back into. And then once I turned around and I saw myself and the makeup and everything, I was just like, wow, I felt like a queen. I did. I felt very, like, beautiful.
Tanisha attended the ceremony, where she was surprised to learn that she was being given a special honor for completing the course so quickly and with such determination.
I got this plaque, the Citation of Philadelphia, and it was presented to me by Sherelle Parker. At the time, she was a city council member, and it just highlighted my accomplishments and my dedication to be awarded the citation in front of, it was like hundreds of people there. It was just, I don't know, it was a memorable moment.
Philadelphia Revealed podcast is a production of WHYY in partnership with Row Home Productions and First Person Arts. Our executive producers are Tom Grassler, Alex Lewis, John Myers, and me, Jamie J. Brunson. This episode of Philadelphia Revealed was written and produced by Jen Kinney. Our lead producer is Jen Kinney. Final mixing and mastering by John Myers and Justin Berger. Story editing from Padmini Raghunath. Our engineers are Al Banks, Diana Martinez, and Charlie Kyer. Special thanks to the Atwater Kent Collection at Drexel University curatorial team. Paige Talbot, Stacy Swigart, Melissa Klemmer, and Michael Shepard. Special thanks also to Dr. Neil Bardhan, Jean Burke Spraker, and Michaela Prell at First Person Arts. Thank you to Michaela Winberg, Hannah Cornish, and Savannah Collins. Our theme music is by Paul Geis and Matt Jernigan. Thanks to Ms. Kramer and the Frankfort High School Drumline. Additional music by Paul Geis and Blue Dot Sessions. Philadelphia Revealed is a project of Drexel University in collaboration with WHYY and First Person Arts. The Philadelphia Revealed podcast and additional programming has been supported by the Pew Center for Arts and Heritage. I'm Jamie J. Thanks for listening. Philadelphia Revealed is part of the NPR Podcast Network.